This is KUOW's The Record. February 19th will mark the 75th anniversary of Executive Order 9066, the World War II-era order that set 120,000 Japanese-Americans and Japanese citizens living in America to internment camps. Mayumi Sudakawa is a writer and a speaker for Humanities Washington. She says these camps were the logical conclusion of years of discrimination.
Executive Order 9066 follows a whole history of quite a bit of suspicion and redlining and isolation of the community. There were a whole bunch of laws, and actually the anti-alien land law in 1913 in our state disallowed Japanese citizens from owning land. So where could you live? You know, you stuck with your people, principally in the International District. And then in 1924, the U.S. government made it impossible for Japanese citizens to become U.S. citizens. So it was the Japanese were considered a race that was ineligible for citizenship. They actually used that terminology that this race is not fit or appropriate to become United States citizens. So a whole raft of laws led us to the Executive Order 9066, which followed closely after the Japanese imperial government bombed Pearl Harbor.
And what did that trigger?
The call for internment was posted, and people who lived within 60 miles of the coastline were considered possible suspects for espionage and spying in favor of the Japanese government. So any Japanese or Japanese Americans that lived within that 60-mile radius were picked up and sent to first the temporary camps, most of which were located in fairgrounds. There were around 7,000 people of Japanese descent living in Seattle. So they were sent to the Puyallup fairgrounds. So depending on where you live, they didn't send you all to the same camp, even if you lived in the same community. For example, the people from Bainbridge were the first of all Japanese and Japanese Americans to be sent to camp. There are very dramatic photos of the Bainbridge folks walking onto the ferry, and they were sent to Tule Lake, whereas the ones from Seattle were sent to Minidoka, which is in Idaho.
You can see that memorial not far from the ferry dock on Bainbridge Island.
Yeah, and in fact, thanks to the National Park Service, in these last several years, a number of monuments have been placed at these 10 different concentration camp sites.
What was the camp like?
When the Japanese Americans were told to report, which was in April, to the assembly centers, they were told that they could carry no more than one suitcase each. So they had these blankets and bags to fill with hay for their mattresses. The people who are still alive today who were imprisoned in the camps actually were pretty young at the time. Because if you figure my mom is 92, and at the time she left for the camp, maybe she was 18 or 17. So for the younger people, it was almost like a holiday.
An adventure?
Because the kids just ran around, and the parents had very little parental control. The kids ran around and they ate, you know, in this big mess hall, and the families were not able to really contain themselves as a family unit. And I have to say that especially for the fathers, the males who were the heads of families, their lives were completely ripped apart, and they had no occupation, no career, no self-esteem. There was a great deal of depression, and I think that it was very hard for the family unit to continue. There was a lot of hard work washing clothes in a trough, or, you know, having to walk a ways outdoors to an outhouse and so on. Lots of dirt and mud on the clothing. And at the same time, there were a number of cultural forms. Some were more American and some were more Japanese.
How was your family affected by the executive order?
My mom's family came from Sacramento, and they were sent to this camp, the far northern area of California called Tule Lake. And my dad's sister's family, who lived at Tacoma, also were sent to Tule Lake. My dad was in the U.S. Army, and he was visiting his sister's family. And then the couple, it was arranged for the couple to meet. And so they were engaged right away and married after the war.
Will you describe the Tule Lake camp?
Tule Lake was really different. It became the largest of the camps. So 120,000 people were imprisoned or interned in all of the camps. The reason that Tule Lake Camp in the far reaches of Northern California became the largest camp is because right around the middle of this internment period, 1942 to 45, a new loyalty oath was issued by the United States government, and it asked several, many questions, but two in particular were very, very telling and a turning point for many of the Japanese and Japanese Americans. And those two questions were, will you forswear your allegiance to the Emperor of Japan, and will you swear your allegiance to the President of the United States of America? So these two questions in particular were problematic for a bunch of people. They kind of said, well, we're in prison and you want us to swear allegiance to a government that has imprisoned us. What the heck? You know, what are we supposed to do? So a number of the people answered yes and yes, and a number of the people answered no and no. They became the famous no-no boys. The no-no boys were men and women that were decided that they would not swear allegiance to the United States. And they were separated from the other camps and all brought together into one camp, which became highly, well, protected from outside forces. And so as many as 17,000, it became the largest camp, and around 17 or 18,000 residents lived there. One of the things, aspects or results of that sequestration is that there was more Japanese culture in that camp. And because the Japanese communities had been highly literate and highly acculturated and had many forms of culture such as music, dance, literature, Japanese language, judo, Buddhist church, Buddhist temple. There were many activities that took place at Tule Lake. And my mother, because she was in that camp, she was able to study with some of the top Japanese dance teachers in the whole United States because they were all sequestered there too.
Do you see parallels between what led to the internment then and the troubles minorities are facing today?
There is always a danger that the outsider will be seen as a potential enemy. There's always economic competition. There's fear of those that are different than ourselves. Fears of those who practice a different religion that is not a Christian religion. During the pre-World War II period, the older generations and those who took part in Buddhist ceremonies in a strange language with in strange locations with strange costumes were held suspects. And I think that this is true today. The Sikh children from the Sikh community who attend our public schools in our King County and Seattle region wear turbans on their heads to follow their heritage and their faith. And they're considered very, very suspect by those in authority. So I definitely feel that there's a wave of concern in the Japanese American community and among others who feel that, for example, the terminology of Muslim registry is very, very frightening. And it's not something that we would want any Muslim person to face.
Mayumi Sudakawa is a writer, speaker for Humanities Washington, talking there about the upcoming 75th anniversary of the executive order that sent 120,000 people living in America to internment camps. You're listening to The Record on KUOW, 94.9 Seattle News and Information.